It gets rid of people who buy land for speculative purposes and waste it, and improves the prosperity of society because it incentivizes people to actually make improvements to the land that they own.
Yes, there's diminishing returns. So you're establishing essentially a wealth cap in the society.
We're going to see what the experts on Reddit have to say.
Philosophers. All right, David, what are we doing today?
We're going to do what we promised to do a while back, which is an episode on Georgism.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I think this came up when we were doing the dozen values.
Yes.
That was the last time I think it came up.
Yes, because it identified us as geo-libertarians, which is Georgist libertarians.
Interesting.
As the closest match for our values, apparently. So, I have done some homework this week to learn about Georgism. I did not read the book, but, you know.
Shame.
Whatever. It's more research than goes into most of our episodes. So.
True. And if you didn't read it, we don't have to worry about citations.
That's true. Yeah. Not that we ever did that before.
Not that we ever did that, because
I can't be bothered.
No. Also,
if you want to know where it is, you read the book.
Standards around citations. That's another weird one. Talk about an infringement on freedom. But, did you ever have to do that when you were in school?
Oh, yeah.
MLA?
Yeah, first of all, MLA is objectively a bad format.
Yeah, because it was made by idiots.
Yes.
Trying to sell books. True.
Am I wrong, though?
All right, well, what was the other one? There's MLA and...
There's MLA, there's Chicago.
No one cares about that one. There's the psychiatric something.
APA?
APA, the American Psychiatric Association.
I think that's it, yeah.
Psychological Association.
Yes, I think that one.
Why did
they
get their own format?
Because they realized MLA sucked and made their own, I guess.
Still, but why not just... You know what we need to do? We need to get on GitHub, open a new repo, and create our own, in the style of like a software license format, and just call it like the
Format Hub.
Yeah, Format Hub. Oh my God.
We could make this a thing.
We could make this a thing.
If stop listening right now. Don't steal my idea.
Yeah, stop listening. Yeah. So how are we doing these citations? In the GNU best format. you do that version 2.0. The GBPL.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, this is literally not the point of this episode.
No, it's not. Let's talk about Georgism.
Okay. Yes. So I pulled up the Georgism Wikipedia page. And to be clear, I did zero research for this episode. Yeah. So do you want to tell me about it, or do you want me to read it and then you tell me in layman's terms what I just read?
Sure, we can do that.
Okay. Well, let me put my drink down. Georgism, also called in modern times Geoism and known historically as the single tax movement, is an economic ideology holding that although people should own the value they produce themselves, the economic rent derived from land, including from all natural resources, the commons, and urban locations, should belong equally to all members of society, developed from the writings of American economist and social reformer Henry George, the Georgist paradigm seeks solutions to social and ecological problems based on principles of land rights and public finance, which attempt to integrate economic efficiency with social justice. That's the first paragraph.
Okay. So, yes, in layman's terms, as is stated, the single tax movement, basically Henry George, the man with two first names, wanted there to only be one tax, and it wasn't just that he started from nowhere and said, I want there to be one tax. It was that he basically viewed land as unownable. You're not allowed to own land, but okay. It basically, he saw it as a public good, right? So we all own the land, which means nobody does. But because, for practical purposes, people do sometimes need exclusive rights to use pieces of land.
Sure.
Essentially, he establishes a land value tax. We'll talk about what that means in a bit. But you're basically paying rent to society to use land exclusively. That's his philosophical paradigm, is you don't own the land, but you may rent it from society, and we implement that by a tax.
You know, for all intents and purposes, as much as I hate theft, I do feel like this is he has an interesting point to make. I would want to know why specifically land. Is it the economic reality that land is for the most part finite, or it's obviously finite?
Yes. So he also likes it, as was mentioned in the opening paragraph about economic efficiency. One of his practical concerns about other types of taxes is that they are drains on the economy because they disincentivize behavior that we find desirable. Yeah. Right, like if you tax people for producing things, that disincentivizes people from wanting to produce more. You're punishing them for doing that,
right?
And so that slows down the economy and makes us all poorer for doing so. But land, all the land exists now, so putting a tax on land does not disincentivize the production of land, because there is no production of land.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, I could
almost all of the time.
I could get into a weird hypothetical about artificial islands, maybe.
Yeah, but no.
Like, for example, if I were to take piles of dirt from one piece of land and then move them somewhere else.
But you have to move them.
Exactly. So, but like, I don't want to. Okay, we're going down the rabbit hole. Screw it. So when I so say, for example, I wanted to own a mine. That's one of the reasons you would want to tax that land's usage, is because you don't want everyone free-for-alling mining a piece of land. It makes a lot of sense to let one group say, this area of land is mine, is mine, and we are going to mine it. And while I'm doing that, since I'm taking this away from society that no one else can use it, I'm paying rent for that.
Mm-hmm.
But say I literally strip mined the thing down, and then a lot of the resources were extracted from that, including just the earth, and moved elsewhere.
Yes.
The value of that land, I guess, is where the land value tax comes into effect, would decrease and things would be used. But if I use some of those resources to make like an oil platform, does the same thing apply to other natural resources like oceanic access?
I doubt it, having not read the book, but also like this guy lived in the 19th century, right?
True.
So there were no oil rigs
But there were rivers and canals.
There were.
So, yeah. Like, I would be curious to see what he thought about canals, because I could, for example, see this applying easily to water and air.
But basically, okay, let's get into what the land value tax is.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because that's very crucial to the understanding of Georgism. So the land value tax is, it's like a property tax, but okay, so unlike today's property taxes where you pay a tax based on the value of the land and everything on it, a land value tax is only based upon the actual value of the land prior to improvement.
Okay.
So, like, if you can own some land and that land has some intrinsic value based upon the area that it covers and whatever natural resources are on it, and then if you build a house on it, that doesn't increase the land's value. The house is a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that would not be considered as part of the land value tax. The purpose of the land value tax... Okay, so basically, Henry George did not like landlords. He thought that landlords really didn't contribute anything to society. Well, and especially... Not even like landlords in the... Not necessarily just the ones that buy land and want to rent it out for money. Like have structures on them, not landlords that improve the land and let people, you know, live in them and use them for other things, but people who would literally just buy and speculate on land prices, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people would just buy land because you can do that, and then just wait for, as the population is growing, for the land values to go up, and then you sell it for a profit, having done nothing, right? You've wasted the potential of that land in the meantime, right? Because you held exclusive rights to it, but didn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
So then the purpose of the land value tax is basically to disincentivize that behavior, right? You're paying a tax on the value of that land, which will disincentivize you from holding on to it and will incentivize you to either improve it, because you will not be taxed on the improvements that you made, which could earn you money. or to sell it to somebody who will. So George's vision of the thing is that it gets rid of people who buy land for speculative purposes and waste it, and improves the prosperity of society because it incentivizes people to actually make improvements to the land that they own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually looking it up, and I see a really interesting summary about this. I'm going to read to you to see what you think about it.
Okay.
Land value is determined by the margin of cultivation. The further land is from the wilderness where there is no land value, none to little, and closer it is to an economic community where labor and capital can earn greater return, the greater the desirability of the land. Essentially, land value is the capitalization of the community's aggregate desire for that land. So the tax you pay on that land is the value of that land is how valuable it is as an uncultivated piece of land based on its proper value. And you would have to. I think there probably are, this is maybe where you start to see forks in within Georgism about how that's calculated. Because I'm sure there are some that don't follow the original vision that say, if, say, for example, I find a land in the middle of nowhere and it has no value to anyone, no one wants it, mm-hmm. and I just claim it and I start building on it, I shouldn't have to necessarily pay a tax on it or very
right.
little.
If we declare that land in the wilderness has no value, then yeah, you wouldn't have to. Right.
Right. And for the entirety of
and even and even after you develop it a little bit, it's still not worth anything because it's not close to a center of economic activity, according
right.
to this.
Well, and I think this is another interesting thing is how often is its value recalculated?
Right.
Because if it's only recalculated...
I think for practical purposes, it's when society forms up around you to the point where taxes become necessary for something.
Well, I was going
to say... That's when.
I think what may make more sense is that the value tax on that land changes when it changes hands. And I would think that maybe we take... inheritance included.
Mm.
Because I don't necessarily think it would be fair that if I... Like, here's the biggest example, right? I go out in the middle of nowhere, build my little homestead. One day, I'm digging a ditch, and I strike oil. That is enough instant economic impact that it would merit the building of an economy around me. All the land around mine just became more valuable because it's attracted to
right,
that.
But that may not be fair because then you have potentially millions of people showing up and then saying, I really want this land. Now it's valuable.
Well, the land neighboring yours, at least, so I can build the refinery.
Well, if we can update the value in real time. Right, like right. we do with property taxes, which basically we're getting into one of the reasons why property taxes are BS.
Yeah.
Is because the people around you can just decide, well, no, the property tax is going to be higher, and they can basically force you out
yeah.
of your own land that you developed or whatever.
And keeping in the spirit of not wanting to disincentivize potentially economically beneficial behavior. Because at
yeah.
the moment
so
I strike
should,
the
so
oil...
Yeah, I can get on board with this, right? Yeah, only when it... Yeah, so you have the ultimate incentive to go out in the middle of nowhere and try to make something out of it.
Yes.
Because you won't be taxed on it, right?
Yes.
Because you found land that had no value that we just defined that way
yep.
and developed it into something with value and brought people around. But then to be part of the system, right? If you sell it to somebody else, then now they have to pay the land value tax on it.
Right. And that, and also because at the moment I discover the oil, if I am aware and I'm a smart person, I could do the mental math and say, well, I'm incentivized to totally report this and make money on this oil. But if that wasn't my intended goal, and this is where you get into the subjectivity of it, I'm actually incentivized to just shut up about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what you want. You actually want people to
yeah,
bring things
you
to
found,
market.
You found and extracted natural resources. We want you to contribute those to the economy.
Right. So the benefit for you being the one who had discovered it is that you don't have to pay those taxes on it so long as you live. And I think that's fair. I also think in a system like this, we would probably need to prevent corporations from owning land mm-hmm. to get around this, which I think I wholeheartedly agree with in general. I do not like corporate ownership in general.
I don't like corporations in general.
Yeah. yeah. So reading on from this, they go into an interesting talk about how you would have to move to the system and how you actually can't determine land value right now because any land values are skewed of a system that exists on taxes on other things, which is putting value on other things. So the way you would essentially estimate it is you would hold auction for it, essentially, or land, you would find land that was relatively similar in a similar situation, hold auctions for it to get a rough estimate of what the value would be. I think that's also interesting because, and maybe we don't go into that just yet, but like, how would you go to this system if you started it today? Like, you abolish all of the taxes, but we're going to do land value taxes. How do you do that? Which I don't think we want to do just yet, because I think there's another key part of Georgism that is often not talked about, because it's not the namesake. You know, I think the gimmick, if you will, which is, it's not a gimmick, but it's the thing everybody knows about Georgism is the land tax thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and the single tax.
Yeah, that kind of is the whole thing.
It is, but it also talks about why that's, because the argument, it also has a built-in argument for,
well, yeah, why this is taxes. Why this is justifiable. Yeah,
well, and the argument immediately going to be, well, but we need so much in taxes, so how are we going to how do you determine what the tax rate should be in value? Because by saying it's based on the value of the land, well
but how much of the value,
but how much of the value, and also it is no longer connected to the demand that taxes are currently being taken to fulfill. Mm-hmm. So it also has a component of it that is based around, you're going to have to cut benefits. You're going to have to cut the things that taxes are going to be in line with the value of the land. And how does that get addressed? So how much, based on your research, like how is that addressed? Like, say for example, with the United States today, I guess we are going to talk a little bit about it. You know, we collect trillions, I think, in tax revenue. Maybe it's hard to keep up with because we print so much money. But say federally, United States, we need $1 trillion. There is an incentive to go out there and make sure that the land value taxes add up to that amount, which is not correct. Ideally, you should base it off of its value, but what does that mean? And is the value of the land somewhat determinant from the benefits offered by the taxes that are collected?
I think you also need to, I mean, well, okay. But the tax rate itself is something left up to interpretation, I think. Right.
True.
Like, okay. If I sell you a piece of land for $1 million, to keep the numbers simple, all right, what should the annual tax on that be, right?
Good point.
Yeah, like, surely it shouldn't be $1 million a year, right? That would be crazy if you just had to buy your land again every time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then again, we are also only talking about the land value itself, not the value of whatever's on it, right?
Right.
But anyway, so it could be 100%, right, where you have to buy your land, you pay the whole price again back to society every year, or some percentage of that. So it already is left up to interpretation what the tax rate should be. So yeah, if society decides we need to spend a bunch of money on some expensive stuff, well, you can increase the tax rate.
Right. Well, I also feel like, though, I think that ultimately would have a very similar effect as modern taxes when it comes to an economic chilling effect. Probably not the same, but the amount of value being generated by society is still being robbed to do some other purpose.
Yes.
Right. And say no one directly claims land, right? Like, someone's going to build on it, and I guess you have to claim it to build on it. But you would end up in a case in which landlords become some of the most taxed people, you know, because even if I'm just renting it, my rent is still going to go up because the landlord's having to pay the land value tax for it. You know, and I also think you might find yourself in a situation, and I know that I'm applying like the way things are now to how it might be then. So, for example, sometimes governments will say, hey, you got to spend money to make money. So what we're going to do is we're going to raise taxes. So say you live in a population, a small town population of 2,000, right? And the town wants to grow. Well, in order to do that, it's going to temporarily raise taxes, i.e., supposedly temporarily, we're going to raise taxes to build infrastructure, right? Also, is the government immune to paying this land value tax? Because if it is, then it has a very, very unfair advantage when it comes to building infrastructure.
So, funny thing, funny tangent about that.
Yeah.
Henry George did not believe in publicly funded infrastructure.
Well, yeah. But most people do. Like,
they
so,
do, right. But...
So, I guess...
To stick with Georgism, though.
Yeah.
If we want to talk about Henry George himself, right. Georgism is still capitalist. A capitalist ideology.
True.
It, so, it, and yeah, it, obviously only one tax, right? Against most taxes, right? I can get on board with that. But yeah, totally free trade. No, yeah, no public funding for stuff like that. But yeah.
Okay. So how about this? So in this case, city government says we want to increase infrastructure, but we are not going to own it.
Okay.
But we are going to help incentivize it being built. So we're going to subsidize it. Okay. Still works because essentially what they're going to say is we're going to bring in a bunch of people and say, hey, you're going to pay us the land value tax for this land you're going to take and build a road on, but we're going to subsidize the construction of the improvement, the road. So you're not going to pay a very high land value tax because it's not currently improved. We're going to subsidize the construction of it. And for the rest of your life, you're not going to pay the land value tax on it anyway, or you're going to pay the very, the lower. In order to raise the land value tax, raise the value of the land around it, which is chilling because it makes people not want to buy that land when they could just move a little further out and be the first, you know,
but that already exists though, because land is already more expensive closer to population centers.
It is.
Where there's infrastructure.
It is, but I guess...
For the same reason, because it's a more desirable place to be for most people.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to look at this from a perspective of if you live in a town where the... I'm also assuming that you're setting a federal level tax, which I think is another thing that probably doesn't exist under Georgism. It's probably a lot more local, how those tax rates are determined and spent.
Yeah, that I'm not sure.
I feel like that would have to be a way you do it, because otherwise you're going to just going to unfairly incentivize areas that already, well, it actually doesn't incentivize areas that already have a high land value. That's actually just offset by the fact that it's just better there, presumably, because people want to live there. Taxes follow demand, essentially, which would incentivize people spreading out a bit more, which, depending on your opinions, may have an inverse effect, like an inverse ecological impact. Depending on your perception of things.
Mm-hmm.
I low-key kind of feel like the ecological impact part of this is just a throw-in to make it appealing to other people a little bit, to be honest.
Maybe.
Or, again, 1800s, what is ecology, you know? Like,
yeah.
Global warming was nowhere near a concern in the 1800s. Not to them.
Not to most people. And probably not to Henry George.
Exactly.
It was known about. It was predicted by at least a scientist.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the Inquisition caught up to
post-industrial revolution.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, this CO2 stuff might actually do something.
Yeah.
That was very late 19th century, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm working through my head. It's hard to think about because I'm trying to think about, like, I'm trying to think about systems of how value and tax rates in some senses can be set at different levels, right? So say, for example, you had a federal system for determining land value, but a local system of tax rate determination, or both local, right? I'm just trying to think about how this would end up actually kind of coming to fruition in a country like the United States. Like, I think obviously the best answer, which I think is the best answer for any tax right now, is tax dollars should be collected locally and spent locally. Mm-hmm. Now, I hear the people saying, well, that's how poor neighborhoods stay poor and wealthy neighborhoods stay wealthy. It's like, well, but we're already redistributing taxes and it's not helping. Like, poor neighborhoods stay poor because the people there have poor habits. Wealthy neighborhoods stay wealthy because they either have enough money to overcome their poor habits, but it's a bleed. It's a slow bleed, you know. And I also think it's just ridiculous. Like, look at Detroit. At one point, it was like the wealthiest city in the United States, like when it was the center of auto production. And now it's like an absolute crap hole. Just because there was money there does not mean there's always going to be money there. It just follows the industry that happens to be there. So I don't necessarily think that matters. But I feel like if you were to do like something more federal, you would end up in a weird situation in which the gamut of value would have to be wide enough to take like a New York City block, which is, if we were to move to this system, have extremely high land value. So taxing it at any rate is going to be a huge amount. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And trying to make a scale that fits that and land in the middle of the desert in Mojave also work, you know? Because like, for example, if I wanted to move in the middle of Mojave Desert, I really do feel like I should pay zero land value tax, because I'm having to pay so much money to even inhabit the place. Mm-hmm. And I think...
Well, it's very undesirable land. Right. Because it's a literal desert.
Exactly. So there has to be a floor of zero, but the moment you have a floor of zero, I don't think it'd be a problem, but I could see people seeing it as an exploit where it's like, but they could still be doing harm, right? Like I could, like, good example, oil refineries bring a lot of value just by existing, like, because they process a rare natural resource into an even more desirable good. But I would want to build them out in the middle of nowhere if I could, to avoid paying taxes on it. But if the argument is, well, that does a lot of ecological harm, but they're not paying any land value tax to offset that, I guess. So maybe instead of trying to juggle all of them in my head, we just look at
it purely. Well, but the farther out you are, the less your ecological damage actually affects anybody.
Immediately. Mm-hmm. But if I have a bunch of CO2 emissions, it doesn't really matter where I'm emitting.
True.
Them. You know, so that's why I'm trying to think about this from a modern ecological understanding. So let's just look at purely the ecological angle for a minute, because I think that's the thing. I think right now the mindset is we should be taxing behaviors we don't like, i.e. carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of talk about carbon taxes and things like that. This wouldn't really affect that. Now, you could make the argument that those should apply upstream to the actual oil itself. Because that's really where the amount of carbon that is in oil when it's pumped out of the ground is the same. Like, the carbon potential is always there. So you could base it on the carbon potential and then just tax it at the source. And then downstream from that, it doesn't matter how it gets used, you know, and then those who are mining.
But that also creates a perverse incentive because I have land with a lot of oil on it. Right. But we want to disincentivize people from extracting and burning oil. Right.
Yep.
But if I'm being taxed higher because there's oil on my land, then that does actually incentivize me to go ahead and extract it and sell it to offset my taxes.
Right. But if you are also...
Instead of sitting on it and paying high taxes for the risk that I don't actually pose because I wasn't interested in getting into the oil business.
Sure. So that's a good point. Well, it would incentivize you to get off of it.
Yes. And sell it to somebody who does want to extract the oil.
Which would be a societal benefit.
Well, not if we're trying to disincentivize people from extracting and burning oil.
Well, no, in this case, the assumption would be that we are offsetting the bad of extracting it with the good of the taxes being spent to clean up after it, because it's assumed that we want it. And don't get me wrong, the answer is the same as it is today. If we could just find a better way, then the value of oil goes down.
Yeah, that's true. The real way is to provide alternative means of energy production.
And that would actually incentivize those who are extracting oil to do that instead.
Right.
So I think it works in that way, although not for that individual who happens to be on the
land. It's kind of in a roundabout way that is questionable whether it would actually work.
Sure. Well, and also, I mean, you still have the age-old problem of taxes are taken under one guise, but they're spent in a totally different way, which that's a whole other problem.
Let's divert to a different thing, how the taxes get spent. George also had ideas about that.
Yes, let's talk about that.
George thought that a single land value tax would actually produce enough revenue to provide a universal basic income.
I mean, if it was high enough.
Right. But okay, whether it's enough to actually provide a universal basic income or not, what do you think about the idea of, okay, we have this land value tax, right? You have to pay rent to society to have exclusive access to land. But all we do with the money is just distribute it evenly to people.
I mean, it's kind of circular. Because people have to live somewhere.
It's true.
And the people who are being taxed on that land, what's to keep them from just setting the rates to whatever the UBI is?
I don't know.
Like, to me, that's just, it seems like you would approach net neutral and it wouldn't actually be all that beneficial.
Maybe.
You know, or even worse, why not set it higher? Because if you don't have rent control, and don't get me wrong, I know there's always an, there's, because you're not incentivized. Well, I guess the real incentive is to spread out again. Like that, again, that is the incentive, is to, if we were purely creatures of economy, we would want to spread out and find places that are not currently valuable, right, and then invest. And
basically evenly distribute ourselves and not have clusters.
And once you reach that point, we would all be generating basic income that we're taxing from ourselves. And then again, you're right back to
yeah, but order. That, but. Well, but then the problem is solved, though.
Yeah, because we reach equilibrium.
Right.
But we don't. Like, we reach a geographical equilibrium, but now we've had to adopt so much more cost, and it doesn't solve for the problem. But essentially, at that point, it's just like having a corporate tax. You know, anyone who has more land than anyone else would end up paying out to those who don't have land, mm-hmm. which would then be paying it to people who do have land but are using it as a tenant. But not enough people could be tenant. But if too many people are offering rent, then rent becomes not feasible. So I feel like there's a formula that could be built around this that would exactly control for the right price of housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that would scale with extractable land value of resources, which actually might be ideal. Because what that does is, as we produce more things, the assumption is that the population grows, which is not always true. Actually, it's kind of the inverse of true.
Yeah, sooner rather than later, it's going to have to stop.
Right. But so I think what would happen is that the population growth would offset the amount of value that could be gained from owning property to a point. But then once your population reaches equilibrium, at that point, that's all there ever will be, really. And so the more value extracted would just put more hands in, more money in the hands of the average person, which would just cause their rent to go up. And then you would see money aggregated into the hands of landlords, because, or you would see a creation and a destruction cycle where anybody, I don't know.
Actually, I don't entirely follow this logic.
I'm trying to think about it simply, but it's not simple, right? So let's break it into an analogy. So say you have 1,000 people. This is the optimal size. Like,
okay,
for some reason, we have gotten to the point of comfort where we do like most Western countries, and we get to the point where we get to a replacement birth rate and we stop, mm-hmm. which, again, reaching, but fine. There's 1,000 people. We set the land value taxes as such that each person also gets $1,000 from the land value being extracted, right?
Okay.
We need 1,000 homes. We need 1,000 places for people to be. So either all people spread out and build their own homes, and you would end up with people living in higher value areas, paying higher taxes, not enough to cover their value. And it would just be moving that value to people who live in lower value areas to supplement them. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they live on cheaper. At this point, it's not about how much you're getting. It's about how much you're paying, really. Because mm-hmm. we're all being paid the same, let's assume. So, at that point, if the personal choices of individuals were to say, in the cost-benefit analysis, because there's so much more than money that goes into this, those who want to live in cities would have to just generate enough value to offset the cost of living there. And then the better they did, the more incentivizing it becomes to have some of your population just not be there. Because unless the rate's moving to keep the UBI the same, like say that's the question I guess that I'm missing. And that's the missing piece I'm looking for. Is the UBI the same and we tax to meet the UBI standard, or is the rate fixed and the more value that's extracted, the more each person gets in UBI?
That's the question that I asked you, is what did you think about if there's a tax that's determined by the land value, but all we do with the money is just distribute that evenly among everybody, however much it is.
But that's the thing. Does it change or not?
We mean, does it change or not?
Which is fixed? The UBI amount each person gets, or the rate at which UBI is collected? Because they cannot both be fixed.
Okay, sorry. What are my options?
You can either set a target where all persons will get this much money, and the
rate... No, that's not fixed.
That is not fixed. So...
All I said was we take all the money and evenly distribute it amongst everybody, however much it is.
Okay, so the
rate... Not saying everyone gets $1,000. It's if we collected $1 million, if we happen to collect $1 million in land value taxes this year and there are 1 million people, everyone gets a dollar.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is, so let's assume a 10% land value tax, right?
Okay.
Okay. What happens when land gets more developed? And its value goes up and people live on it. If you fix the rate, more money is collected.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then each person gets more money.
Yes.
Because we've developed land. Right?
Right.
So we're fixing the rate and we're letting the UBI amount fluctuate, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's where I'm at. So what would end up happening is if you can find yourself in a situation to not cultivate land too much, you could essentially live for free.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I move in the middle of nowhere and I cultivate a meager existence, the amount of struggle I would have to do to get to sufficient levels of happiness for myself,
mm-hmm.
with the plus the UBI, I think it incentivizes some segments of the population to do that. Whereas, and that would, they would be living on the wealth extracted by those who want more than what they could get from the UBI, but they're paying more of the taxes because they're living in high value areas, because that's where you would need to be to generate more value.
Right.
Right. So you essentially create a wealth cap in some ways where the amount of effort you have to put in is not just enough to make, for every percent wealthier you get,
diminishing returns.
Yes, there's diminishing returns. So you're establishing essentially a wealth cap in the society.
A soft wealth cap. You haven't decided a wealth cap, but there is a point of equilibrium where it doesn't matter how hard you try, you won't be able to make any more.
Right, which is based on how valuable land can get. And if we're not factoring into that, if we're not factoring the value of the land off of how desirable it would be for someone else to live there, it's based on like the value of the things consumed or generated. You would reach an equilibrium eventually because the more UBI everyone has, the more they have to spend on disposable income, which would then drive up the value of the land, which would drive up the UBI, which means more disposable income to buy more of the things. That's one possible outcome I think you'd find yourself in, is you would have one segment of the population who are living below the UBI amount that are not generating value and are not incentivized to generate value, mm-hmm. because they're at the acceptable floor. But those who are generating value, the demand that would be put on them would be based on the UBI amount spread. But the ability to generate that value is tied to the land usually, or would make the land more valuable. I think you'd have to delink the two, right? Which I know that Georgism doesn't say, oh, the value of this land is based on how profitable the building is on top of it.
Right, no.
So
it's based on how many people literally want that land, regardless of what's on it.
Yeah.
How valuable is the location?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question.
It'd be pretty low. Because you'd reach equilibrium in that case. Because those who are living out in the middle of nowhere, if they had sufficient UBI, wouldn't want that land. No one would want to come be that person. Because
mm-hmm.
I think, and this is the problem with most tax and land wealth redistribution systems, is that there is a universal happy bottom where people are like, if I can get to this, if I don't sink any lower than this, I will stay here. Arguably you cannot incentivize me to do more because any amount of effort would not yield a return that would get me sufficiently high enough in my lifetime.
Right.
So I feel like as long as your rate was such that the UBI could offset, like, but at that point you're fixing the UBI amount. I don't know. I'm not an economist. I can't think about it. I generally don't like the idea of UBI. It's communism to me, but I understand that it's something we would need to move to in a post-scarcity society. I generally don't like the idea. However, I do like the idea better than the entitlement programs that offer specific things, because those get exploited even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I feel like it also depends on what kind of government you operate, because I feel like you will always end up with a Pareto distribution of the majority of the population benefiting more off the backs of the minority. And they would just want to make the land value tax higher to extract more UBI to mm-hmm. make their UBI payments go up. But that would disincentivize the creation of the thing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like at that point, I don't know. I think you still have the same problem you have with current entitlement programs, which is the majority, as long as the majority is benefiting, which they will, because 50% of the people do not do 50% of the labor, you know, or 50% of the value generation. I think a smaller percentage of the population actually generates a greater percentage of the value, especially in certain economies, you know, that are not based around things like, well, any technologically advanced society, I think you end up seeing that, right? You know, when one person with tractors can do so much more than a flood of people,
mm-hmm.
you don't need that many people, you know? So how do you keep them from just ruining society? You know, I don't know. I don't like the idea, to be honest with you. I don't like it. I don't like it. But the problem I have with it is more or less the democracy than it would be anything else, which I don't know what George's ideas
I think,
about
I think,
democracy
yeah, it
were.
Might, be worth a follow-up at some point. I think a follow-up would be actually reading George's book
mm-hmm.
and seeing what he had to say, but also researching what modern Georgists think about this, right, now that they've had time to think about these potential issues.
You know, there's a subreddit for Georgism.
Yes.
I'm curious. Actually, wow, that's literally the first post is Georgism and UBI.
Nice.
Hey, everyone, I would like to learn more about Georgism, and I truly believe in the land value tax, but I'm also a fan of UBI. How would you fund UBI without funding it with taxes on people or without protectionism?
Okay, so basically just questioning George's assertion that it would provide enough revenue for a UBI.
Yeah. So yeah, apparently, and we're taking strangers on the internet's advice here. So
yeah, literally the first post on r/Georgism, we're going to see what the experts on Reddit have to say.
Yeah. So just skimming some of these comments to see what we got here.
But what's like the top comment? Because that would be a good answer.
Well, I'm looking at the top comment. It says, Henry George proposed what he called to be a citizen's dividend that was to be funded out of the LVT, and which is essentially a UBI. The amount to be paid out wasn't tied to the cost of living in the same way that UBI often is,
mm-hmm.
but the idea is basically the same.
So it's what I was saying earlier, right? Where everyone get... Yeah. We pay something to everyone, what can be afforded based on the tax collection, which may or may not be enough for a person's total income.
They do go on to say, note that such payment, where a citizen's dividend or traditional UBI, will almost certainly inflate land rents. So an LVT is actually a better way to fund such a payment than taxes on labor capital. And see, I don't agree, because... But maybe I do agree, maybe I don't, I'm thinking about it. Because here's where I'm at, right? So... Because that's inevitably where this is going to go. Like, the one thing we all need is food. The second thing we all need, and air and water, but the second thing we need besides the three basic things we need to subsist from day to day is a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're taxing the places where people live, the land on which people are living, to fund that, any tax collected on land that's being used to service people living there will immediately offset its cost of living and drive its value up, right? If you look at it, the building on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what that essentially means is that any land that is being utilized for anything other than a place to live, drives down the cost of living, of being in a place, theoretically. Like a mine. No one lives on the mine. The value of the mine is not determined by its suitability for habitability.
No.
But it would pay into the UBI.
Well, but also, okay, but the mine's value, okay, by having employees at the mine, right, people are going to live near the mine, which will drive up its value, right? The value of the land is not based on how many people live literally on that land. It's how many people are around it and would like to have that land.
Right, but I can want to have that land and not live there or be anywhere near it.
Right.
Because I could want to own a mine in the middle of the Mojave, but want to live on the beach.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to pay taxes on the mine, even though I'm living on the beach. Right?
Hmm.
I'm going to have to pay taxes on the mine, though, because people want the mine.
Yeah.
Or the land the mine's on, mm-hmm. I should say. And to live near the mine. So the taxes that are extracted from that are going to go back into a system that will go back to lessen the impact of the cost of the land near the mine that people want purely for inhabiting purposes. Because even though their rent would also be, even though their land value taxes would also be higher, they're getting UBI from that to offset it. Whereas the only valued land that's not being offset by the UBI is land no one's living on. Because I wouldn't use my, because let's assume that everyone spends their UBI on their rent first, which I don't think is unreasonable mm-hmm. to assume. And in fact, what if we didn't make it a UBI? We just made it a credit towards your rent, which just for the sake of this argument to see how it would go. Like, let's assume okay. we do one last tell you how to spend your money, which is you have to spend your UBI on the land you live on. And then any leftover you get to keep.
Okay.
Okay. So we're assuming a good habit here. Any amount that you're taxed will come immediately back out of your UBI because you're having to pay that on the land that you mm-hmm. live on, right? And then there's some amount left over. But for any land that's not being lived on, that does go back into the pool and the excess would be spent on me, right? And it raises the overall UBI for everybody if we're extracting more value because the taxes we're making is higher because of the things we're putting on this land. So I think it would almost inevitably end up serving as a way to ensure that the affordability of a place to live scales with what would serve to offset land being used for other purposes. Because the buying power people would have to purchase a place to live, because that's one of the primary things we need, would always be there to compete with the land being used for something else, which may have been his point, which is that we don't want land being claimed to run a bunch of cattle on. And then that drives scarcity of livable land up, making it harder for people just to afford a place to live.
I don't think that was his point, although that is a reason why there's kind of a... So Georgism was largely forgotten for a while, but it's kind of being rediscovered. And that is a lot of people's motivations, is like the desire to be able to own their own place to live, but the seeing the dismal situation of that right now.
Yeah,
think how can we fix this, right, without radically changing everything about society?
Yeah, or enforcing, you know, limits on land you can own.
Right.
Which would be tyrannical, you know,
right,
in that way. And I think if that's the stated goal, I'm usually not on board with societal goals and paying taxes towards them, but that is one that I would be more okay with, because I do think at the end of the day, if you have the promise of a place to lay your head at night or a place you can call your own, I am for incentivizing ownership of land, because mm-hmm. ownership of land in my value system mm-hmm. also aligns with other values like responsibility, firearms ownership, things like that, because it's yours, right?
Right. You're a stakeholder in society now. Yeah.
Yeah. You literally are a stakeholder in society, you know, staking claims and such.
Yes.
Where that comes from. But like, and I agree with that. And any land that's used for some other purpose also drives up. If we could link those two things together, I would be okay with that. I still don't agree with it because it puts the one damper on the exploitation of land that I think is appropriate, which is people still need a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, if you force a bunch of people into a place where there's nowhere else to go, and they're being told they have to leave, but there's nowhere to leave to, that's how you end up with a revolution or a conflict, right. I.e., yeah, you know. So I'm okay with that serving as a mitigating factor. Now, I'm not saying that we should issue a land credit, because pretty much whatever the credit is, most renters are just going to go, all right, cool, I'm setting my rent at that plus, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I say that, you know, property, it'll be cooled by property development prices, you know, like at some point it just becomes so much cheaper to just move one tile over and mm-hmm. build than it does to pay rent, which is how it should be anyway.
Well, yeah. And that actually is one of George's goals. Yeah.
Yeah. Is to reduce landlords, I guess.
Yes. He's anti-landlord.
I think that's an okay-ish goal. I just don't think it's ever truly achievable, because some people, it is just so not worth, you know, in their personal value equation, it is not worth dealing with the things that come with land ownership. Mm-hmm. But it would also at least put the emphasis back on landlords to provide all of those services.
That's the thing. You know. Yes. Yeah. You're not just buying the land and slapping something on it for someone to rent and then like leaving it to fall apart, right? You are incentivized to actually provide a good place for people to rent from you, because otherwise it becomes so much cheaper to just do it yourself that no one is going to give you the time of day, and right. You're going to go bankrupt paying your land tax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, yeah, no, okay. Yeah, I'm more okay with that. That's interesting. Interesting.
So definitely more research to be done here.
Yeah, I think so.
The first time I ever heard about this, it was in a completely different context, and I thought it was very weird. But after doing a little bit more research, I'm kind of, I don't want to say warming up to it, but I take it more seriously than I did before. I thought it was just a very weird idea before, but now I get why people could think this is a good idea.
Yeah. I do think it would also be interesting to map out the sub-Georgists as well. Because apparently I'm reading about dark Georgists.
Is that like Dark Brandon? But no.
No. to quote this, this is dark Georgists would redirect windfall gains from the broken system towards Georgist causes. So essentially, they would tax at 100% capital gains on land asset values.
Mm.
So essentially, you make no money from your land becoming more valuable, and then that money would be put towards the cause of implementing the land value tax, which would make it actually cost you. Yeah. I do agree. I think chilling speculation on like natural resources that we need is probably a good idea without specifically prohibiting it, which is dumb and impossible. You can't, you know, you can tax like things like water as much as you want, but people can always speculate on the value of things made from that water mm-hmm. all the way down the pipeline, you know? And I think that, I just read a username. It almost cracked me up. I gotta stop looking down. And I do appreciate the elegant simplicity of this system as an, you know, more agorist type person.
Right.
You know, and I think it would be an easier pill to swallow than abolishing all taxes and all welfare programs.
I was also considering the like possibility of this as like a stepping stone.
Maybe. I do think one of the
like, big... I definitely think that this seems like a better system than what we have now.
Oh, sure. Yeah, 100%.
I'd rather have this than the current system, the current labyrinth of taxes that we have now.
100% agree. Like, I also think... Well,
and the way they're spent.
Well, and that's the way I feel about things when people propose a... What do they call it? A flat tax?
Or yeah.
Is that the... We get rid of all taxes except sales taxes, and sales taxes are set at a specific rate?
Right.
Yeah. Not great.
Or income tax, or... what, or pick your favorite tax, but it just has a flat rate.
Yeah.
And we just have that one.
Yeah. This is kind of
a form of that. Well, it's not flat though.
No. Well, that's another question. Could you have marginal land value taxes with brackets? I hear Congress people like starting to like twiddle their fingers and say, I think that's ultimately the problem, but any tax system is going to have that problem.
Yeah.
How do we determine that? And there's always going to be a way to exploit that to benefit some people, you know, because it could be determined that, oil derricks are, you know, oil refineries are actually pretty low land value because nobody really wants to live next to that loud piece of machinery. So it's actually pretty low value. We decided.
Mm-hmm.
So these industries are going to get lower land tax values on the land that they're on, surrounding they're on, not because of their industry, you know, because that's not what this is about, but because they make the land less desirable.
You need some objective way to measure it, right?
Which it's hard.
It is hard. It's hard specifically because it's based on the land value and not the total property value. Because it's easy to get the property value, right? How much did someone pay for it?
Yeah.
That's easy. But it's like, okay, the property value. But how much of the sale was the land, though?
Yep. Well, and also, how does it change with time? Because it goes up and down.
Yes.
Right? And so you could say,
but if
how
you
much
could do that, then you could say you could at least get out of the weaseling of, oh yeah, we just decided this land is worth less because reasons, right? It's like, well, but okay, if it's actually worth less, then fewer people are going to be trying to buy it, or people are going to be willing to pay less for it.
But that's the thing. Feelings are what decide its worth, because the willingness of people to buy
well, but measurable based on people's actual decisions, right? Actual decisions and offers. Not based on, we decided this land is worth less.
Right. But then there comes the problem of, what if I just offered to buy it just to jack up its value to screw over my competition?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get people into weird bidding wars where they're never actually going to buy it. Or they do. Or that would disincentivize transacting, because it's like, well, I don't want to pay this much for it. I want to pay more for it to offset the tax rate. So like, say for example, you owned $100,000 piece of property, and the current land value tax is sitting at like zero, we'll say, at a 10% rate. Well, the real impact on me purchasing that is not just the $100,000 for me to buy it from you, but I'm also going to then automatically put that's going to set the land value tax at 10% from zero to $100,000. You know what I mean? So now I'm going to have to pay yearly $10,000 mm-hmm. in addition. So not only am I paying $100,000 to buy it, but I'm going to have to pay $10,000 a year, which decreases its value from the perspective of, I want to purchase it. So ideally, I'd like to charge you enough that, well, essentially, it turns land into a liability, weirdly enough, because it's like they don't. Well, it adds a liability component to an asset where it becomes.
Well, but that's kind of the whole point. At least philosophical paradigm is, you don't own that land, right?
You're just renting it
from society. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. that's interesting. It's hard to think about. Well, and here's the other thing about that too. Okay. So let's take it back to the system we talked about before. So I discover the oil, I pay zero on it. So for my lifetime, I am getting just profit. I die.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership at that moment, let's just say it could transfer to next of kin, because we still do inheritance. But the moment it does, that person now has to pay the $10,000 a year to maintain the land that I originally paid $100,000 for. Right? Well, actually, no. They didn't buy it from me. I gave it to them for $0.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't work.
So yeah, it can't just be based on the transaction value itself. No. Anyway.
You would have
neither
to
of us know enough
it.
About this to say like what I'm sure in the last 100 years of Georgism people have thought about this more than we have in the past hour.
Probably. But I do want to follow that through real quick. So let's just say that, like, my dad finds oil. Mm-hmm. He makes a bunch of money off of it. Presumably, he leaves me some of that money to buy the land from him, right? But it's one generation's worth of wealth for that land. someone who had one generation's worth of wealth that just generated more could mm-hmm. look at that and go, oh, that is so worth it. I'd be willing to pay more than you could afford. And then yeah. it becomes theirs. Mm-hmm. But then they set the new ceiling. I think when does its value go down? Is it the moment no one's willing to buy it or pay less for it?
Then again, it's based on like the number. It's based on the population density is what I was gathering from the thing you were reading earlier.
Yeah.
So it's like the land value goes down when people don't want to live there anymore.
Yeah. More research required. But now the noggin's jogging fairly.
So what have we learned today?
What we've learned is that taxes are theft. And
we did not learn that. We knew that going into this.
I relearned it today. What I did learn today is that taxes suck no matter how you slice or dice them. Like, I have been living in luxury in my too hard, didn't read bucket, throw it away, just get rid of taxes, you know? And even doing something as simple as let's just pick one thing to tax is not actually
opens up
easy.
So many cans of worms.
Yeah, maybe not as many as how we do this now, but you know, interesting. So that's what
it is. Interesting. Yeah,
and that Georgism is kind of neat.
If you're a Georgist
and you want to talk to us about Georgism and you have all the answers,
send us an email.
Send us an email.
Read it sometime in the next year, maybe.
In the next year, and we'll do a follow-up to this episode. All right. Well, until then, though, philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.